Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
See what we did? It's a song about rain because it's raining outside.
You know that that is
people say there's no planning that goes into the show.
That is genius in action right there.
People say that we pull this show out of our hats.
Out of our hats.
Oh, and there's more rain songs like that coming too. Yeah, we've got a morning of rain songs with you here on the Big 720.
Are you taking requests?
Yeah,
we are. 1 o'clock this afternoon.
Yes, we are, everybody. We'll keep you up. We are now, is the thunderstorm warning just expired, right?
One of them. We're looking at 9:15 for Cook and DuPage, but Kankakee and Will County runs for another 15 minutes.
Okay, so we'll... We're going to take a break in a minute, and then we'll be joined by meteorologist Mike Hammernick, and we'll get some specifics on what is happening in the Chicago metropolitan area, what's happening that is headed our way, and we'll give you some time frames when all of this is expected to happen so you can kind of make your plans for today.
In addition to the severe thunderstorm warning, a special marine warning issued really for what you would just call the southern tip of Lake Michigan, from Michigan City right on up through Winthrop Harbor until about 11:30 this morning. And you know, that's not to be taken lightly. The marine warnings on the water with this type of weather, not good.
Oh, if you're on the water right now,
not good.
Please go back to land until, I mean, and this is going to be over in a couple hours.
Right.
You know, by they're saying basically by about 1 o'clock or so, all the storms should come through, right?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it may be a little earlier than that.
Okay. All right. So we'll, as I said, we'll keep you updated on all of that, but please don't do anything ridiculous. I saw, I got to tell you about something that happened to me this week, but related to this, I saw, you know, driving this morning, it hadn't really quite started raining, but it was clear that it was about to any second. And people are driving like crazy and, you know, no regard whatsoever for weather conditions that are going on. I mean, people, just please use some common sense.
You know what we're in need of?
Our unnecessary warnings.
Yes, yeah. We are.
We are. Unnecessary, redundant warnings. May I start?
Yes.
If it's raining, turn those windshield wipers on.
And you must have your headlights on as well.
That is a state law.
You're a cop?
No, I'm just saying it is a state law.
They'll pull you over and say, hey, Nita Rooney, put your lights on.
Citizens arrest. I've seen Schwani do that so many times. Gomer Pyle.
And if you are in need of windshield wipers, you can buy them at Schwani Mart.
Ah. So I'm driving.
They're used.
Your old ones?
Yeah.
You saved your old ones in case you ever need them again for something. So I'm driving the other day. I'm on Elston Avenue driving. It's one lane in each direction, right? And a bicycle lane. I'm driving along, and I see in my right-hand side mirror, a motorcycle is in the bicycle lane trying to pass me on the right. Now, motorcycles are not supposed to be in the bicycle lane. Those are for bicycles. Not for motorized vehicles are supposed to stay in the
regular lanes.
Motorized vehicle
lane. Cars and trucks.
So this motorcycle is trying to pass me up. And so I kind of veer as far left as I can because I don't want this crazy guy anywhere near me. And he does pass me up, and now he's doing the same thing to the car that's in front of me. And the car, we come to an intersection. The car in front of me turns right, doesn't see the motorcycle that is trying to pass him on the right, hits the motorcycle. Motorcycle guy, the driver of the motorcycle, goes flying off the motorcycle. I've never seen anything like that happen before. Thank goodness he had a helmet on. But, you know, obviously everything stopped.
This was on Elston Avenue?
Yeah, Elston Avenue near, I want to say near Roscoe.
Okay.
Roscoe, something like that. Right by the, there's a fire station right there, Chicago Fire Department, and it was right near that. But, you know, everybody pulled over, got out of the car, you know, what's going on? And it was like something you see in the movies. You know, this, I'm right behind it all. So I'm seeing the car starting to turn right. I'm seeing the motorcycle trying to pass him. And, you know, I'm seeing this just right before it happens. You know, you can see, obviously, this is going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. And then this guy goes flying off of his motorcycle. He was taken away in an ambulance. You know. I was traumatized, Shawnee, let's be honest.
Well, you know, that would traumatize you.
It's
when you
weird.
See something like that, that does. Certainly affects you.
Yeah. So, and then this morning, somebody on a bicycle in the bicycle lanes is trying to turn left in front of vehicles.
Like, oh, that's happened to me.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot.
I'm telling you, you know, why can't people just use a little sense?
That's
out
happened
on the
to me. There was a bicyclist. I was headed south on State Street, and the bicyclist was riding alongside of me. I'm really glad I was going fairly slowly, because all of a sudden he decided to speed up and turn in front of me.
Yeah,
to go left, and he just waved at me and said, "Oh, sorry."
The guy this morning cut somebody off. I guess that's not me. But it was the person in front of me again. A bicycler, it turns left in front of the vehicle that's in front of me. The motorist stopped in time, honked his horn, and then the bicyclist decides to give him the one-finger peace sign. After just cutting in front of him, almost causing an accident, almost causing himself injury if the car had hit him, would not have wound up well for the bicyclist, but the bicyclist decides to flip the guy off on top of it, and carries on his merry way.
When did they change the bicycle pattern? Because I remember as a kid, we used to ride as you could face traffic, so you could see what was coming at you.
Right.
You're
right
on the other side of the street, and that way you don't have to keep looking behind you to find out what's kind of gaining on you.
Yeah.
You can actually see it.
With these bicycle lanes, you know, you're not supposed to ride bicycles on the sidewalk anymore. You're supposed to ride in the bicycle lanes. But you're also supposed to abide by all of the, you know, the same rules of the road. And a lot of bicyclers do not. You know, they just think, I'm on a bike, I can do whatever I want to do. But when you're doing things, you know, if there's a vehicle on your left and you're on the bicycle lanes, there are vehicles there. What kind of numbskull doesn't stop to make sure that it's clear to make a left turn before you do it?
And, you know, there are some intersections here, and I can't remember exactly where, that they have signals for just the bicyclists.
Right.
Downtown,
yeah,
on Dearborn,
yeah,
they do.
Yep.
But the retrofitted bicycle lanes, you know, on the north side and such, the streets are narrow enough already. And then you have to deal with the bicycle. Now, if there's a bicycle coming from both directions, everybody tries to swerve out of the way, and you're looking at headlights coming right at you.
Yeah. Bicycles are not going to win those kinds of competitions.
No.
If I'm on a bike, I'm going to take extra super precautions, because something goes wrong, you're not going to win that. Car's going to win that, as I witnessed of that guy that went flying off, and he was on a motorcycle. It wasn't even a regular bicycle, so... All right, well, welcome to our show, Three Crabby Guys Complaining About Stuff.
And our far-flung forecast takes us to Seneca Falls, New York.
Seneca Falls, New York, you say?
Seneca
Falls. You almost said something bad.
I know I did. Seneca Falls, New York.
Wow.
I will say this very slowly.
Shawnee with the potty mouth today.
Seneca Falls, New York.
Right.
Population 6,681.
Okay.
It started around the American Revolution.
Okay. Okay.
It's in central New York State.
Okay.
But the reason we bring up Seneca Falls, New York, is because in addition to Seneca Falls being kind of a model for Bedford Falls, New York, for Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life.
Hi, Bedford Falls.
Seneca Falls.
Hi, you crazy old savings and loan.
Seneca Falls, New York, in 1848, was the site of what was called the Women's Rights Convention. This was among the very, very first meetings for women's rights in the United States. Mm-hmm. They were leaders such as Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Coffin Mott, to be joined a few years later by Susan B. Anthony. Oh. But the reason we bring all of this up is because it was on this date,
yes,
in 1920,
yes,
that all of their work finally came to fruition with the 19th Amendment to the Constitution guaranteeing women the right to vote.
Wow.
That took place on this date in 1920, but it all began in Seneca Falls, New York. I almost said it again. Seneca Falls, New York.
I suggest that you pick locations in the future
that I can say
do not have F words in them.
Seneca Falls, New York.
You know what's great about this item that you have today?
Mm-hmm.
Women today get exactly the same amount of pay for the same job as a man. There's still no disparity. All these nearly 100 years later.
150 years later, 160 Jeez, years later.
I believe that.
Yeah. And the ratification said that it is the duty of women of this country to secure to themselves their sacred right to elective franchise, meaning that they could vote.
Yeah, right to vote.
The rights of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex. So the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote, ratified on this date in 1920. But all of that work started in 1848.
How about that?
In Seneca Falls, New York. And the temperature
was tough. It's women back then.
Partly cloudy,
you know,
71.
How hard it was to, you know, step up and do all that back then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was an act of bravery. And they were ridiculed.
Right.
They were ridiculed. There were a lot of critics for the people there. Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton that we mentioned. Yeah. They endured a lot of criticism.
Of course. They were very, very courageous pioneers in the movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now if they can only get equal pay.
Yeah, after 1848.
I'm
going to
harp on that because
right?
I think it's crazy that
that
still takes place.
Sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but Seneca Falls, New York, partly cloudy.
You just really want to risk the license today, don't you? You are tempting fate.
I'll just say Nita Rooney from now on. That's harmless.
This past week on WGN-TV Morning News, I talked live with Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson. This is her performance from the movie Dreamgirls, for which she won an Academy Award. She's also a Grammy winner, of course, one of Chicago's very own. In 2008, her family suffered a tragedy that I can't even imagine recovering from. The murder of her mother, her brother, and her little nephew, Julian D. King, who was only 8 years old at the time and was murdered. A horrible tragedy for Jennifer and for her sister Julia, whose son was little Julian. Since then, Jennifer and Julia put on what they call a Hatch Day celebration every year. Little Julian used to call his birthday Hatch Day, the day that he was hatched. And they throw this party to try to turn this tragedy into something positive. And they give away school supplies to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who show up at different community centers. This week it was at the Bellevue Baptist Church at 107th and Halsted in Chicago. And people were lined up for blocks. They got backpacks and school supplies and all kinds of things to, you know, sort of try to get them on the right foot to get back to school. Before the event, we were able to sit down and talk both with Julia and also with Jennifer, as we have for lo these many years. I'm guessing that neither of you can just even believe that this is 9 years strong.
No, as you were saying it, I'm like, 9 years. It just shows how time flies, and I don't know where time went. That's all I can say, but it's a blessing to still be here 9 years later and still, you know, giving to our community.
Yeah. Julia, we've talked about this so many times, but the reason that Hatch Day got started, honoring your son, Julian, who passed away with many of the other members of your family, it's something that your family wanted to do to give back to other kids, right?
Right. Well, Jennifer was like, she wanted me to have something to look forward to. So she said, oh, how about we do, you know, we started with the Christmas, and then we was like, oh, well, his birthday is right before school starts back, and since he loves to learn, he loves to give, we thought it would be perfect to do school supplies and give him his Hatch Day, because he always wanted a Hatch Day. So it's from the heart.
You know?
The other thing, a lot of the volunteers here have T-shirts that say Happy 18th Birthday. I cannot believe that Julian would have been 18 this year.
He would have been 18 this year, and I woke up thinking that this morning, like, oh my God, he would be legally grown right now, right. Probably driving us around somewhere.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Well, it's the legacy is wonderful, but the gun violence that took his life and your mother and other family members' lives, it's worse than ever in the country. I mean, it must be something that you both reflect on right now, that other families are going through similar losses that your family went through.
You know, yes, every single time it's like reliving it over again. And of course your heart can't help but to go out to each and every family and individual that it happens to, because it's something not a single soul could ever predict or be prepared for, you know. So hopefully we can be an example to know, for them to know, you know, there are others like you and you can carry on and show them ways to honor their lost loved one's memory.
Yeah, it's more than tangible through the years how both of you have turned a tragedy into something positive. And I guess that's really the only way that you can look at this, right?
That's how I feel about it. And then I feel like the devil took enough. He don't need to steal our joy. He can't have nothing else. So, and every time we do something like this, we make him mad. But my thing with the gun violence is, I would say, don't wait until it happens to you.
Right.
Try to find a solution now. Like, we all need to come together, like we're here today, to try to find a solution to curb some of this, because it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
Yes.
Just on a career note for you, the trailer for the movie Cats is out there. I'm so looking forward to seeing you in that. Are you done shooting that? Is that finished?
It is finished, and it will be out this Christmas or holiday.
December 20th.
December 20th. Yes, sir. It's coming. I'm Grizabella.
Yeah. Was it fun to do?
It was a lot of fun. It was probably the most unique filming experience I've ever had, and a huge learning process. And it's something I'm very proud of, and that every cast member put a lot of work into. So we're all very proud of it.
Yeah. And have you started work on the Aretha movie?
I am currently in pre-production for the Aretha biopic as well. And it's yet another project that's probably the biggest challenge of my life. But I'm taking a hit on, and I'm giving Aretha every bit of my all and my heart.
Yeah. Now, even though Aretha handpicked you to do this, it's got to still be very intimidating to take on the life of somebody so bigger than life.
Yes. You said it best. And every day, every time I try to approach it, I get overwhelmed. Like, what a life. What a life is, and is. It's what a legacy. And that's why I take it so dearly. And I really want to give it every bit of my all, because she deserved that.
Yeah.
And she gave us so, so much.
Yeah. I can't think of a concert where I had so much fun this summer than Jennifer Hudson at Ravinia.
Thank you.
Bringing down the house.
Thank you.
Yeah, was that so much fun for you? As telling you before we got started, I felt like I was at Jennifer's house hanging out with her friends.
Good.
Who could sing, and just that's what it felt like to me.
And I like the crowd, no matter how big it is. I like to make it feel as intimate as possible. And as a child, for me, it was always my dream to be like, oh, could I sing? So I always like to make a point to incorporate the crowd. And I find it that even as a singer, I don't want to sit and listen to somebody sing for 2-3 hours. So, but I would like it. I do like it when we can all be a part of the moment, because it's an experience for both sides, not only the performer, but the audience as well. So I like to incorporate everyone and make sure we're all involved in some way.
Yeah. People are still talking about the show itself.
But the way that you started the show, you didn't come on from backstage. You came from the lawn on Ravinia and walked into the pavilion, shaking hands with people and just singing with people. It made you feel so at home.
I love that. That's what it's about. Here at J-Hub Productions, we take care of our own, and we do consider you our own. I love to incorporate everyone, and I like to know who people are.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to get close to them.
Of course, my favorite moment was when you're walking down the aisle and approaching me. You noticed me.
Yes, I did.
And said hello while you were still singing. And for some reason, I don't know why I did this. This is what I did. I bowed. I kissed your hand. I don't know why. My friend's like, did you just kiss her hand? It's like, yes, I did. She's royalty to me.
Thank you. I'll take it. Thank you.
Jennifer, thank you for everything.
Thank you for having me.
It's always so great to see you.
Always good to see you. You can kiss my hand.
Yeah, see, now she wanted me to kiss her hand. That's my new thing now. When I interview celebrities from now on, I'm going to start kissing their hand. That's going to be my new trademark gesture. Won't Tommy Lee Jones be excited to hear that? 10:44, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. And the guest, which we have been referring, is our pal Betty Moore, theater critic with LeBonTravelAndCulture.com. Betty, thank you very much for being here this morning.
My pleasure.
I apologize for our silliness here this morning.
Oh, it's so much fun.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
I hear that you wrote a play.
And it's all your fault.
It's my fault.
And if it doesn't work out, and if it's a disaster, I can blame it on you.
Yeah, it's my fault. Explain what this is.
You know, it was around 2006. They had that musical, The Pirate Queen, at the Cadillac Palace downtown.
Oh, right, yeah.
And you had a whole bunch of critics. You had some of them on the phone, and I happened to be on the studio. And I brought this pad of paper, and I was writing things that they could do to change the script. All the other critics thought it was a horrible play, and I thought, you know what, maybe if they change this, and then they do this, and they doctor this. And you said something hysterical. You said, Betty's rewriting the script as we speak.
You were. I remember you were feverishly taking notes what we were talking about.
So you said that. You laughed. The other critics laughed. And I went home, and I think to myself, what started to happen after that, I go to see a play. And I start doing the same thing. You know, if only they changed this, if only they did this, it would be better. And this was last year, and I'm watching Channel 11, and they had this thing about Julius Caesar on with some of the English actors, and they were talking about Abraham Lincoln's murder, and they were talking about how John Wilkes Booth was the American Brutus. And I'm a Shakespeare buff, and I thought to myself, I know a little bit about the murder of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
I know that John Wilkes Booth killed him. I know that he murdered him because of the Emancipation Proclamation. He was pro-slavery, and of course Lincoln wasn't. But I started doing some reading from original sources, and what I found out is it wasn't just about slavery that caused John Wilkes to want to murder Lincoln. He was an actor. At those days, that's all they did is Shakespeare. His brother Edwin was the premier Shakespearean actor at the time. And John Wilkes wasn't that good of an actor. And his brother would put him down. Edwin would put him down. And he got so mad at his brother that he wanted to show him. On top of which, John Wilkes Booth also was in Julius Caesar. He played the role of Brutus. He saw Abraham Lincoln as Caesar. He saw himself as Brutus.
Wow.
So there are two reasons why he killed him. One, he saw Lincoln as the same dictator as Caesar. And his brother thought he would never amount to anything. He was going to prove to his brother
notoriety
that he was going to be the most famous actor in the world, which he ended up being.
Isn't that crazy? That's a little bit like what we see in the news now with these crazy people who are shooting up schools and shopping centers and concert venues. Many of them just want to be famous.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's
as what you're talking about with Booth.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest impetuses for most people, you want to feel like you're important, like your life matters, like your life has meaning. This is what gave John Wilkes meaning. So you
wrote a play about all this.
I wrote a play. It's called The Murder of Abraham Lincoln, The Shakespeare Connection.
Okay.
And there's a theater company that what they're doing is they're planning on putting it on next spring, but they're new to Chicago and they wanted to see how the public's going to react. Typically, when you do a stage reading for one night, it's without costumes, without sets. The actors just read it.
Read from a script. Right,
right. Right. Yeah. And sometimes you have music to go along with it. So they wanted to see what the audience here would how it would appeal. So what they've done is they're letting the public come in. They're charging like $10 to see this production, and I'm a nervous wreck over it.
Wow.
But
that's exciting. When will this be?
Let's see. It's Wednesday, September the 18th.
Okay.
And it's at the Greenhouse Theater. And if anybody wants to know more about it, all they have to do is, I think there's contact@royaljamestheater.com.
Okay.
And that's theater with an ER.
Okay, very good. That's coming Wednesday. We'll mention that again.
I appreciate that.
In a couple of minutes. Was it, how was it for you writing this? Because you usually are on the critical side.
You know what? It's kind of might make me a more empathetic critic, I think, to see what it's like on the other side. Fortunately, critics aren't coming to the reading because I guarantee you if they were, they would skewer it just because I'm a fellow critic. But the writing of it was fascinating and very difficult because it takes place between 1863 and 1865. So all the events in it had to be historically accurate.
Right.
Some of the, what the characters say has to be historically accurate. But you know what? It was so, I felt like I was driven to write this. I don't know why.
It sounds really interesting to me.
It was fascinating to write it as I was reading more. I started out with the idea, well, he's an actor. He killed Lincoln. It would be perfect for a stage presentation.
Right.
I was taking notes. But the more research I did on it, the more I realized there's a psychological thing with his brother and his family. His father was also the greatest Shakespearean actor of the time.
Yeah.
His father told him you would never amount to anything.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is everything he touched was bad. He made investments. They went bad. He wasn't successful as an actor. Everything he did was bad. He was going to make his one mark.
Wow. This sounds fascinating. Okay, well, we'll keep track of all this.
Thank you, Dean.
Just when you're a big, famous Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, you have to promise that you'll still come back here.
Oh, whatever. But if it doesn't work out, it's your fault,
it's
Dean.
It's my fault.
It's your
all
fault.
Right. Yeah, that's, get in line.
for what was it about the hate mail that you have one
we
guy
We have a new department of hate mail here on the show that Schwani's in charge of.
It's too funny.
Yeah. What's great right now? I know that you today, I believe, are the final two performances for Music Man at the Goodman Theater, and it was extended. It's a classic American musical. I recommended it when it first opened. I gave it a good review.
Well, Mary Zimmerman directs, and she always directs well, and I thought it was a lot of fun. The music is great, and it's very Americana nostalgia, which is, you know what, in these days where everything seems to be going crazy, it's nice to see how people reacted to each other.
Simpler, happier time.
Yeah. It's Zimmerman is a phenomenal director anyway, so everyone expects good things. The only thing about it that disappointed me a little bit, and it could be because of, you know, you've seen Robert Preston in the movie, you've seen him. Robert Preston was unbelievable. This poor guy who is the actor, how could he come? I mean, you know, follow in the footsteps. That's the only thing
is...
It's
a tough comparison.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he did to be fair to him, I thought he did a very competent job with it, but it's very different from Robert Preston's.
Right, exactly. People get a chance to see it. There's two more shows.
Yeah.
There's a couple of other good things. The Wizard of Oz is Chicago Shakespeare. There were a lot of kids in the theater, and it's amazing. I thought to myself, oh, my God, they've never seen the movie. There were so many people, they've never seen the movie, and I was thinking... They seem to, of course, it's so much fun. It's a great story. I think that when people left that theater, they're probably thinking, oh, we've got to see the movie.
Right.
Because the movie was phenomenal.
Isn't that interesting? I guess it makes perfect sense that it's not on television like it used to be on television. It's maybe seems outdated. Maybe the quote special effects in the movie maybe seem very ancient. So maybe kids aren't watching it, but this takes it right back down to the core
of this
very magical story.
Yeah, the kids loved it.
Nice.
And that's playing till August the 25th. And there's something else that's going to be ending August the 25th. We're kind of at the end of the season. Everything is petering. All the stuff that's going to be opening up, it's opening up in about 2 or 3 weeks in September. The new fall season starts. But True West is playing at Steppenwolf, and they did it in 1982, which is a show that put them on the map.
Right.
It was a play, and John Malkovich was in it, and who else was the Gary Sinise was in it.
Yeah, a lot of the Steppenwolf originals were
they were in it,
right?
And it probably started the whole Steppenwolf theater of, you know, as I'm watching this, they've got this kitchen there, and nothing is going on in the kitchen. I'm thinking to myself, why do they have this kitchen set? Why are they wasting all the money with the kitchen set? And then at the end of it, forks are being thrown, dishes are being thrown. They had the kitchen set just so they could take all the cutlery and throw it around and trash the stage. I mean, the stage, and that's what, it's not as new as it was in 1982, where you didn't see that kind of theater, but it still yeah. works. The two brothers hating each other and fighting over each
other. And so representative of how Steppenwolf made its mark with this revolutionary style of a theater that, as you say, it really hadn't been seen before.
They never change. You know what? Steppenwolf does dysfunctional families.
Yeah.
That's their thing. That's their thing.
Yeah. As a fan of the opera, as longtime listeners of the show know, Betty's been trying to get me to go to an opera for years now, and maybe one of these times I will. But the Lyric Opera is doing something kind of cool at Millennium Park.
Of all the things in the summer, actually, I think of all the things all year long. Now, this is just me as a person, not even as a critic. This event is the most fabulous, most wonderful. They're out there in Millennium Park. They're playing previews of the opera season. They've got some stuff that isn't even in the opera season, and it's for free. And you're sitting there with the view of the city on one hand, and there's a wind blowing in from the lake. It's stunning, and it's September the 6th, Friday. It starts, I think, at 7 o'clock, and since it's a lot cooler then, I mean, I usually sit there, and when I watch this, I think, I can't believe I'm here. This is so phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I go every year, and it's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's going to be, let me see here, this coming, no, not this
Friday,
coming
Friday. September the 6th.
Friday the 6th to kind of bring some attention to the Lyric season opener, which will be Saturday, September 28th. With Barber of Seville.
And you know what? That's one of the very few, one of the very few operas where no one dies at the end. You don't walk out wanting. It's a very happy opera. It's very funny. It's actually a farce. It's a comedy.
Well, and as I've told you in the past, all I know about opera, I've learned from watching Bugs Bunny
Bugs
cartoon.
Bunny.
And I believe Barber of Seville.
Yes.
Is Kill the Rabbit, right? Isn't that, I mean, it's not Kill the Rabbit, but
that's a good imitation, Dean.
But it's the song.
That's right.
In Barber of Seville. It's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da that Elmer Fudd sings.
And by the
Bugs
way,
Bunny.
You know what? For anybody that doesn't know about opera, Rossini, who wrote the Barber of Seville, for anybody that ever saw the Lone Ranger, and you see the overture of William Tell. That's good, Dean.
Yeah.
That's good. That was Rossini. It's the same composer.
Betty's play, a staged reading of her first time ever writing a play, The Murder of Abraham Lincoln, The Shakespeare Connection, will be this coming Wednesday, the 18th, at the Greenhouse Center on North.
No, it's a September.
Oh, September 18th.
September 18th.
I'm sorry, September 18th. That's going to be at the Greenhouse Center on North Lincoln Avenue. And if people want to get more info on it, you said go to royaljamestheater.com.
Put contact in front of it. Contact at.
Okay.
Contact at royaljamestheater.com. And then just send a little note saying you want more information, and they'll send them an invitation.
All right. And if you want to read Betty's reviews and stories, Le Bon Travel Lebon-travel-culture.com, Lebon-travel-culture.com, Lebon Travel and Culture. One of the greatest songs of all time, The Boss, Bruce Springsteen, who is the inspiration for what I think is the best new movie of the weekend, called Blinded by the Light. It's such a heartwarming, touching, wonderful story about a London teenager of Pakistani descent. His parents are immigrants from Pakistan. They moved to London to give their family a better life. You know, they know the old country traditions. You know, like a lot of our parents and grandparents, they know the old country ways. And sometimes you want something different for yourself, though. That's what this movie is about. The London teenager does want something different for himself. And his world opens up when a friend of his gives him a couple of Bruce Springsteen cassettes to listen to. And the words of Bruce Springsteen, the lyrics of his songs speak to him and, you know, help him realize that he's got to follow his dream. He can't let anything get in his way. It's moving. It's heartwarming. It's a story about parental relationships. It's a story about tradition. I really, really like this movie. And it's called, as I said, Blinded by the Light is the name of the song. It was Bruce Springsteen that wrote that song that was made a hit in the late 70s by Manfred Mann and the Earth Band. But in New York last week, I talked with the filmmakers, the person to whom this really happened. This is a movie, is actually a true story. A writer by the name of Sarfraz Manzoor was that London teenager, and he was obsessed, and his life changed because of Bruce Springsteen. He got to meet Springsteen and was so moved by it that he wrote this book. And that's what this movie now is based on. I've got a couple of interviews for you. One is with the playwright, Sarfraz Manzoor, and also the lead actor in the movie who plays the young teenager in the movie. His name is Vivek Kalra.
You do something and you just think you're telling your story, and that's good enough, actually. But the idea that it would, a story that's set in the 80s in a particular community, in a particular country, has had people in tears and laughing and thinking about their own context and their own life. It's kind of beyond anything that one could have hoped for. It's what you want in a film, but the idea that it's actually doing that is incredible.
Yeah, what do you both think is connecting with people about this film?
I think I was saying this the other day, I think the idea that people are more than just surface level. You look at Sarfraz now and you don't think that he is a man who's had a 30-year love affair with Bruce Springsteen, you know, and the character in the film is similar, you know, he's someone that doesn't look like the things that he'd like you'd sort of connect him with, which is not a good position to be in. So I think what people connect to is that. They connect to, you know, the father-son story, which is what your book was about.
Yeah.
But the father-son story is a really key one.
I think it's because there are things which are specific, as in for the character at Springsteen. Mm. You know, there is a particular community, there's a particular town. But the things that are underneath it, being a kid, wanting to do something different in your life, wanting to please your parents but still follow your own dream, wanting to kind of be bigger than the place you've grown up, those are such universal ideas. Yeah. And I think that what's happening is people are seeing the specific, but then they're actually seeing themselves in it as well.
Yeah, the idea of judging a person based on appearance is such a relevant one, taken out of the front page of today's newspaper, of people prejudging other people, that makes this film even more timely and relevant,
100%.
I think, as well.
What's crazy about the film is that it's about a 16-year-old kid in Luton, 16-year-old Pakistani kid in Luton in 1987 in a working-class family whose life is changed by the music of Bruce Springsteen, right? But what's even crazier is the fact that that is a true story, and that's based on this man here.
Right.
So it's like a crazy tagline enough, but it's like the fact that that's real.
I mean, I think if a studio
really
would come
happened,
up...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if a Hollywood studio had come up with it, they'd be like, well, it sounds a bit
Nobody
cheesy.
Will believe that.
So there is something quite nice about the fact that it's real. But I think what's really amazing is that, as you say, it's a film that's set in 1987, But if you kind of ignore the haircuts and the clothes, it actually feels like it could be
very
a present
relevant,
day story.
Yeah. Yeah. What was Springsteen's reaction to hearing about the book in the first place and then the idea to make a movie about it all?
So I wrote this book called Greetings from Barry Park in 2007. And then 3 years later, I was at an event in London where I ran into him. It was a premiere. And he came up to me and said, I loved your book.
Wow.
So that was an extraordinary thing. And that was what sort of opened the door to the idea of the film. And then we went away and wrote the script and what have you. And then Gurinder, the director, went up to New York to show it to him, and apparently he went up to her, hugged her, and said, thank you for treating me so beautifully.
I just have to ask one final thing, is what is it that in Bruce Springsteen lyrics and songs that you think resonates so greatly and so universally?
I think he's an everyman, isn't he? Like, you listen to his words and you really listen to them, and anything that seems even remotely surface level, you give a Google, and it's not. It has, like, depth and meaning and layers to it that you wouldn't generally pick out.
Depth, meaning, layers, but also honesty and truth. Ultimately, he's authentic. And so what he's talking about his town, his community, his dad, but he's doing it with so much emotional truth and authenticity that we see ourselves in his lyrics.
That is the screenwriter Safraz Manzoor. This story really did happen to him when he was a teenager. Conflict with his parents. They wanted to do it the old country way. He wanted to do something different with his life. Springsteen's music opened up the world for him and completely changed his life. Vivek Kalra is the young Pakistani actor who plays the boy who is so affected by Bruce Springsteen's music. We sat down and talked with actor Aaron Pagura and also the director, Gurinder Chadha, who also gave us the movie Bend It Like Beckham, but she was really passionate about telling this story.
I think the film is resonating right now because I made the decision to take Safraz's beautiful story, the memoir of Safraz Manzoor, the journalist that the film is based on. I took that story and I wanted to have a massive impact with people around the world to show an alternative to what I see going on around the world, where people are being encouraged to be divisive and be separate and dislike each other. And there's a kind of culture of hate, you know. And I experienced this when Brexit was announced in England. And I was very upset about it. And I put all my fears and my pain about Brexit into the last few drafts of this film.
Yeah. And is it Springsteen's music that is joining people, that is that universal quality, do you think? The lyrics?
I think it's a combination of the true story of a kid trying to find his way, about the father-son story. Everyone, you know, wants to please their parents. Everyone has needs approval from their parents. Even Bruce didn't get approval, you know. No. But I think Bruce's music certainly lends itself to a way that we as human beings, you know, should be living.
Yeah.
You know, he says, no one wins unless we all win.
Right, right.
His songs are wonderful stories about people, ordinary people who are struggling to get by often, people that are on the margins of society, or people who aren't really talked about much. And he gives voice and dignity to them.
Yeah.
And that's most people in the world. And so I think the film taps into Bruce's vision of the world and Bruce's vision of America.
Yeah.
And that's why I think people are warming to it.
All of this set in the 1980s. I'm guessing you weren't even born then. I'm guessing maybe like 19.
No, I just look really good for my age.
90. You have a fantastic group of beauty regimen. What was it like for you to be living in that era and wearing those clothes? And I see a boombox and cassettes back there, all of which play pivotally in this movie.
Do you know what? It felt so close but so far, because I'm playing a Sikh boy that had to grow up in a predominantly white neighborhood, and that, you know, that to me was like, you know, that was my life growing up. On the other hand, wearing the, you know, the tight leather jacket and the turban and the tight jeans and all of that, it was new to me. The my favorite thing about going back to the 80s was the way that the rose just changed. It was like all these old cars were there. It was amazing. It was fun to see.
Yeah, it brought back tons of memories for me.
Me too.
That was completely my era, and probably maybe yours also.
Yes, yes, definitely.
I don't want to age anybody like me, but
yeah. What was lovely was when I showed the film to Bruce. You know, and of course Bruce was writing these songs in the 70s and 80s, and he saw my director's cut, and he watched the film very intensely. You know, and after the film, I wasn't sure what he was going to think, but after the film he came and he gave me a big hug and a kiss, and he said, thank you for looking after me so beautifully. And then we sat there for an hour and talked about what he liked about the movie, and I think there were many things he liked, but what was great for him was that he was writing these songs in the 70s and the early 80s, and even though the film is set in 87, it feels very contemporary. Yeah. And I think for him it was this idea of taking those songs that he'd written years ago, decades ago, and making them feel very relevant to today, you know, giving them a new life. So I'm very pleased that he gave us his music, trusted us with it, and we were able to, you know, make it relevant and bring it to a whole new generation.
Yeah, the movie is called Blinded by the Light. It's my favorite new movie of the week. I gave it a Dean's List A. Highly recommend it, especially if you're a Bruce Springsteen fan. But there is so much more to this movie than just the nostalgic Bruce Springsteen element to it all. That's certainly part of it. But it's a story about tradition and families and finding your own true spirit and pursuing things you know, that you want to pursue no matter what. Really liked it. Blinded by the Light. The number one movie of the weekend, interestingly, is the R-rated kids comedy that's called Good Boys. A story about three sixth graders who are going through awkward situations in the movie. It is very hard R-rated, peppered with all kinds of F-bombs in this movie. I think, you know, part of, you know, what people are going to see this for are little kids using language like adults. And it wound up being the number one movie of the weekend. Very interesting. So last night, I'm at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. Boy, that's a beautiful theater. And I just went as a civilian last night. You know, I wasn't like formally reviewing the show. I was just there to enjoy the concert. Bernadette Peters, an evening with Bernadette Peters, which was amazing. Beautiful night. She did like an hour and a half. It was just great. But I go up to the concession stand to get a little beverage before the show. And, you know, I'm waiting in line. I get up to the counter, and the gentleman behind the counter is ready to take my order, and he looks up at me and goes, "Moron!" That's always nice.
That's beautiful.
That happens all the time now. I'm at the Jewel. I'm doing my shopping. And, you know, someone comes down the aisle. Hey, moron.
Moron.
Hi, moron.
You just should wear a sign that says that.
I don't need to, apparently. Yeah. Apparently, I don't need to. People.
For those who are not in the know.
Who don't know that I'm a moron?
Yeah.
Well, y'all really
moron.
Have to.
Moron.
You really only have to be around me a few minutes to learn that I am a moron.
Well, when you push your grocery cart around with your coat over it, so no one can see what you're buying.
I don't want anyone to see what I'm buying, right? That should give you a clue,
yes,
right
that
there.
Should definitely do it.
That there's something going on.
That should definitely do it there.
All of this, of course, referring to the lovely segment that we do every day with Steve Cochran between 8 and 8:30 here on WGN Radio. More on entertainment. More on entertainment. It's every weekday morning. We always have tons of laughs. We always have a good time, and I hope you can listen. And I can't tell you how great it is when you're, you know, standing in line someplace, you know, at the theater. You're there for an evening of Broadway, and you're just, you know, somebody shouts moron at you. People around you are going to, they're going to look and see what's up with that.
Were they all pointing? Were people in the back pointing?
It became a little like parting the Red Sea around me. Nobody wanted to stand near me. which was fine. It was fine. Really, really fun show last night, the Bernadette Peters.
And what a theater to do a show like that.
It's the perfect theater for a show like that, because it's kind of an old school show. She's singing these great old Broadway, you know, show tunes. And, you know, the Paramount Theater in Aurora, it was built in 1931 during the Depression. That rarely happened during the Depression, where they would just build a theater like that. But it's an Art Deco theater. It's a very unusual style of Art Deco. It has been restored to its original glory. You could just sit in your chair and look around the theater and just enjoy the splendor. You don't see that in theaters anymore.
It's a movie palace. We did a great remote there. Remember when we did a remote a few years back there,
right before
Christmas?
Yeah.
It snowed. We had a snowstorm, and it subsided, and we had a beautiful morning there.
Yeah, that was great. That was really a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
They've recently replaced a lot of the seats. For those of us that are maybe require a little more seating area.
What are you talking about?
You're not talking about leg room, are you?
No. Well, the leg room is fine, too. But
more of like width that rather than
it's
length.
It's really more of a girth issue. The seating is extremely comfortable. They have little cup holders now. They never used to have that. And you can even bring beverages into the theater. A lot of theaters don't let you do that. So, just a great time all the way around. They're going to be starting their Broadway season soon. And they've got a whole lineup of fantastic shows that we'll be talking about. In the meantime, they've got a lot of concerts that are going on out there as well. You can check more at ParamountAurora.com. Hey, good looking. At 12:40, it's time to eat. Welcome into Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time. We're talking about some of the festivals around the Chicago area today. But one of the festivals that you may want to take advantage of is Gelato Festival that's going on in the Little Italy area. Joining us in studio from Gelato Festival is Phil Greenberg and Camille Hawkey. Guys, welcome. Nice to have. I don't think we've ever had gelato experts on the show before. Very nice to have you both. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So tell us about the festival, first of all. I want to learn about gelato a little bit. What's the difference between ice cream and the different kinds of gelato, et cetera. But Phil, why don't you just tell us what the festival is and give us some of the nuts and bolts about that if people want to go today.
So Gelato Festival is an international event. It's been it's been touring the world since 10 years ago, and the American wing is 3 years old. This is our second time visiting Chicago, so Gelato Festival Chicago 2019 is a part of Chicago's Little Italy Fest on Taylor Street. We're really happy to be a part of that amazing tradition, and we think it's the perfect home for an Italian festival. The idea is to bring together gelato artisans to compete, and they each bring one original flavor, which will be judged by experts, foodies, as well as the general public, ticket-holding people.
I'm a pretty good gelato expert myself, you know.
Really, you should get a wristband. It's all you can eat.
I should be a judge in it, because if I'm in Italy or someplace, I stop at every gelato store that there is and taste and sample. And that's why I want to learn more about this now, because there clearly is a huge difference in gelatos, and especially here in the U.S. where things get, I guess maybe technically might be gelato, but are nowhere near the kind of quality that you might find someplace else. So I'm assuming, if you'll excuse the pun, that you have the cream of the crop at your festival.
Well, you
serving
up
gelato samples, right?
Yeah, you mentioned cream, and it's funny because one of the differences between ice cream and gelato is that ice cream has about between 14 and 20% milk fat. And that's the government regulation. So gelato usually falls between 6 to 8%.
Oh, really?
And so there's actually a little less cream.
Less cream.
But what that means is more of the original flavors that each one is based on. So that means strawberry gelato tastes more like strawberry than strawberry ice cream.
Yeah. Is that the main difference between ice cream and gelato, just the difference in the amount of cream?
Well, there's two others. The second one is that there's less air whipped into gelato than ice cream, which means, again, more vivid flavors. And it also means that when you get a pint, you're getting more, because that air does take up space, both on the palate and in the container.
Yeah, talk to me a little bit about how this could start. I assume this must have started in Italy.
Yeah, it started in Florence, the birthplace of gelato. And it started with a passion, because so many gelaterias, you know, they don't have chains the same way that we have chains here in the U.S. So the idea is to bring these artisans together. And within the gelato festival, it's like a little village of gelaterias. So you have today... We have 12 booths set up on Taylor Street, and each one is manned by a different gelato chef who created each flavor and produced it every step of the way.
Are these gelato chefs from Chicago, from Europe, from...
They're from all around, actually.
Everywhere.
We have, I believe, three chefs from Chicago, including Angelo Lolino, who's behind Massa Cafe Italiano and Vero Gelato. There are certainly some others, but
other than that, artisans. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the best gelato makers. From if people sample today, they'll be sampling from around the world. It sounds like
that's right, and there's a range of ingredients as well from around the world. I know that some flavors have pistachios that were brought from Sicily, and there's an uni miso flavor that incorporates that. For those of you who don't know Japanese, that is. What do you call this? The spiny things that you can step on and they give you venom in the foot.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
No, you know the sea. It's a seafood.
I don't know. I don't know. But I mean, it's like miso soup.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same kind of
soybeans.
Same kind of flavoring. Yeah. Camille, talk to me. You represent the company called Pre-Gel America, and what is that?
Yes, Pre-Gel America, which stands for pre-made gelato, is the largest manufacturer and producer of ingredients for Italian premium ingredients for gelato and ice cream. And we're here as the main sponsor for ingredients for supporting the gelato festival. We have now been doing this for 3 years since really this started in the U.S. market. And we are here under the brand whitegelato.com, which has been introduced to help consumers and artisans have an online presence. For consumers, it's a great resource to go and find out everything that you want to know about gelato, the history, the different flavors, the difference between ice cream and gelato. And really, it's a listing for them to find out all the gelaterias that are around the country if they're looking to go and eat some gelato. And for the artisans, it's a great resource for them to sign up, have some more visibility online, and show what events they're doing and where people can expect them to be.
So creating more of an awareness of gelato, to try to scoop out some of the market share, I guess you might say, from ice cream, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. The Gelato Festival and us really have the same goal, is to bring the culture of Italian gelato in the U.S. market.
Yeah. The mark of a great gelato to me is when you get yourself a cone or a cup and you taste it, and your mind is blown when you taste these very vivid flavors. Sometimes, especially here in the U.S., you get gelato in some places, and it tastes very chemically. You can tell that it's like things are more unnatural than natural. But like fantastic gelato, it's like if you take a tomato out of your backyard and eat it, and the flavor is so vibrant and explosive. To me, it's the same things in gelato. What makes that? I mean, as someone who sells the ingredients for all of this, What is the magic of gelato?
I believe it's really trying to source the ingredients from the best place around the world. You know, we're getting our ingredients for the places where the ingredients are, where they are at their best. And this is one of the beautiful things about our ingredients, is that regardless of the seasons, you're going to get really the best ingredients that you can get. So your gelato is always going to be the same, regardless of the season, if the tomatoes are in season or not.
Yeah.
We can still provide you
right.
that.
Well, Phil mentioned...
So I just want to hop on that really quick, because another huge component of that explosive flavor that you're talking about is freshness. And because there's less fat in gelato, it actually is less protected from thermal shock, which means it's even more important to eat gelato right after it's produced. That's why at Gelato Festival, we travel with what we call the Buon Talenti, named after the creator of gelato. It's the world's largest mobile frozen dessert laboratory. And all of the gelato that our guests will be tasting on Taylor Street this weekend, just Sunday now. We were open yesterday, but we're still open today. It was all produced starting Friday.
Wow!
And that was for Saturday. Now last night they were producing all of the flavors that will be available today.
Today,
yes.
I guess that explains that when you go to these tiny little gelato stores that you see in Europe and Italy, most predominantly, that it looks soft. It doesn't. It's not like a mass-produced frozen. Like if you go to Baskin Robbins and you know you see these giant vats of ice cream that are hard as a rock. Who knows when they were produced? When you go to these gelato stores, it's soft. It looks like somebody just made it in the back room. I guess that's what you're talking about,
yes,
of the freshness of it.
Absolutely, yes. The gelato doesn't have a long shelf life, so you have to reproduce and do it really every other day, really.
Yeah.
And the beauty of gelato is that you can completely customize your recipe. You can really make anything possible, any flavor possible. You can completely customize it being an alcoholic flavor or savory flavor, which is growing in trends a lot. Flavor-wise, we have flour that is really coming a trend as well. There's limitless possibilities for what you can do with gelato flavors.
What are the most popular flavors?
I would say in the U.S. it's very seasonal. So every time you come, the fall comes around, now we have pumpkin spice latte comes around. We have apple pie, or salted caramel is always a big one.
Yeah.
Well, this year we just came out with the unicorn, of course, which is, you know, it's just based on the trends that anything that we see around, we get inspired with all of these different flavor trends.
Yeah.
You know, around the holidays, we have some more traditional cranberries
candy canes,
Halloween, we do candy gelatos.
Is that different in Italy and around the world? Are the flavors different?
Everyone really is customizing it per their market. Italian, you always have the most traditional Italian flavors, pistachio, hazelnut, cannoli.
It's my favorite. Pistachio is my favorite.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. You know, you should stop by the festival then, because Angelo, who I mentioned earlier, is making pistachio Sicilia, and it's really an incredible flavor. It's garnished with roasted
pistachio
fresh
nuts.
Pistachios.
Oh, man. And I've always wondered why some are so amazing and so rich and nut-like flavor, and some taste like chemically is the only way that I can think to describe it. And so now this explains it to me.
I believe it's also a recipe of putting your passion in it. You know, all of these artisans are truly passionate about what they're doing, and they work really hard at doing everything. So it's a mix of ingredients for all of it.
So there's a competition that's taking place. People are sampling. Are people voting for their favorites, or are there gelato aficionados that will make the determination of who has the best gelato at your festival?
Well, actually, it's a 60-40 split. So our technical jury, which is composed of food experts, is given a 60% weighting on the overall score. But every ticket-holding guest of our festival casts a vote once they've tasted all the competing flavors.
Okay. And how do... do you just go to the Little Italy Fest and then you're in your fest, or is it?
That's right. It's a
adjacent,
six block festival.
Adjacent but separate.
No, it's a six block festival, and we're nestled right in the middle. It's a really great location because the community is perfect for us. It's the exact kind of people we're trying to reach, and they've been showing the type of passion we were looking for. It's exciting that they're all getting a chance to vote, because the winner of this festival, meaning the chef that receives the most votes, is going to be continuing on to compete in the Gelato Festival American Finals in 2020. Now, there's one more stage. The winner of the American Finals will continue all the way to Italy in 2021 to compete in the World Masters.
Wow.
Against the other 35 best chefs in the world.
Wow, so this is a continuous thing then.
Yes, it's a four-year cycle.
That will wind up in Florence? Is that where it'll end?
I'm not sure that the specific location has been decided,
determined,
but it will
exactly.
be in Italy.
Yeah. So you said that there are several different ways that people can participate in Gelato Festival.
Yeah, that's right. The all-you-can-eat wristbands are $30 for adults, $25 for seniors and service members, and $15 for kids at the gate. But you can also pick up a ticket for three scoops, just $10, and you can select those three scoops from any of the competing flavors at the festival.
Okay, that sounds great. It's all on Gelato Festival at the Little Italy Festival that's going on 1336 West Taylor Street. And it winds up tonight, I assume, right?
Yeah, we opened at noon today, and we'll be closing the doors, and we will cease to serve gelato at 8 p.m. But our award ceremony will be held at 8:30, when the winning gelato chef will receive the Gelato Festival Chicago Gold Medal.
Actual gold medal. That's very cool.
And it might be a Chicago native. It might be your favorite gelateria.
That sounds great. Thank you for coming in and telling us about this and educating us a little bit. It's nice to meet you both. Camille Hockey and Phil Greenberg. All right, that's going to wind it up for us today. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll see you again next Sunday morning. We'll see you every Monday through Friday between 8 and 8:30 on Steve Cochran Show. More on entertainment and, of course, on the WGN TV Morning News every Monday through Friday.